Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by SeatGeek, the smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT and save $20 off your very first ticket purchase. The show is also brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network. This is Locked On Heat. Thank you for subscribing, for listening. Really appreciate it. But you can also subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd, Locked On NBA with our boss, David Locke, Locked On NFL, now that it's NFL season. And while it's NFL season, if you're listening to this, you're a Heat fan, you're probably a Miami Dolphins fan, listen to Locked On Miami Dolphins. Now, on with the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. Here with me, as always, is David Ramil, and the Miami Heat are saying Chris Bosh's career with the team is over. This is the latest news out of Miami Heat Media Day, recording this on Monday. We finally have some finality to this, at least, right, David?
Yeah, but I mean, it's exhausting and incredible to believe that it's over after such a 2-year-long battle, really. I mean, we found out about, you know, his first diagnosis with blood clots almost 2 years ago, and it's been this on and off issue. We thought it was resolved last offseason. A full year later, it's been this ongoing dramatic situation, and to finally get that closure, it's been tiring. And still, though, even after dealing with this for so long, you get the sense you can't believe it's over.
I mean, all these videos, Chris Bosh's documentary series for Uninterrupted, I mean, the Instagram videos that he's talking to fans in, you can see the struggle and the heartbreak in his face and in his voice when he's talking. And it's just, I can't even imagine what this is for Chris Bosh. And then we've been covering this for, you know, almost since the last playoffs, right? I mean, Bosh has wanted to play since the playoffs, and we've been talking about it for so long. And the first time we actually hear anything from the Miami Heat, it's on Media Day, and it's Pat Riley, and it's him saying, yeah, he's not going to play for the Heat anymore. I mean, it's pretty incredible, and it wasn't the news I expected. I think a lot of people were very hopeful up until his last failed physical on Thursday. But before that, I think, you know, reports are that even the Miami Heat were hopeful, and Chris Bosh was hopeful, and Pat Riley was hopeful, and fans, of course, were hopeful that Bosh could take the floor. And you even look at the way that Pat Riley approached this free agency, and they didn't sign a bona fide backup power forward in case Bosh wasn't playing. There's Derek Williams, James Johnson, Luke Babbitt, Josh McRoberts on the roster. None of them are starter-level power forwards in this league, you know, especially for a team that's hoping to make a playoff run. And before we get to the basketball stuff and Chris Bosh and everything, to me, it's amazing how within 2 years, the entirety of the Big Three is gone. I mean, this has been such a dramatic offseason for the Heat. First, you lose Dwayne Wade. Chris Bosh is gone. He's reportedly not going to be around the team even. So he's basically off the team, right? His salary is still there. He's still a member, you know, salary-wise of the organization, but he's not going to be around the team, according to these latest reports. And so within 2 years, after four straight finals appearances, after this big, huge, you know, Big Three era and show, within 2 years, all three of them are gone. LeBron James goes to Cleveland. Dwayne Wade goes to Chicago. Chris Bosh in this freak illness that is going to sideline him and looks like is going to end his career, at least for the Miami Heat. It's just, we tend to put so much trust in Pat Riley, or fans do. I mean, I keep seeing the word wizard thrown around, or godfather, the godfather of Pat Riley, as if he's just going to save us. And I mean, he lost the entire Big Three within 2 years. A team that went to four straight NBA finals, which is one of the rarest things that an NBA team can and has ever done. There is no reason for these guys to leave. And yes, you have LeBron James, who is separate and different in the way that he approaches the business and approaches his business of basketball, but he leaves for Cleveland. He severs a relationship with Dwayne Wade. He's in Chicago. The Chris Bosh thing you can't really control, but the facts are the facts. All three guys are gone, and they had no reason to really leave in the first place. And if we always look at Pat Riley as this master constructor of championship organizations, these are probably some of the two worst years a top-level executive has ever had in the NBA. I mean, you lose the best player in the NBA, one of the top five players of all time, you know, by many accounts, the face of the franchise in Dwayne Wade, and then one of the most versatile players in the game in Chris Bosh. You lose all of them within... And everybody except Udonis Haslam is gone from those championship teams. I just think that a lot of fans who put their faith and trust into Pat Riley, I think that their trust is misplaced, because the reality is LeBron and Chris Bosh wanted to play with Dwayne Wade. Pat Riley hasn't made a big free agent acquisition since 2003 when Lamar Odom wanted to sign, when he signed Lamar Odom, right? Everybody always says Pat Riley gets what he wants. Pat Riley gets the big name free agents. What was the big free agent that he got without help, all by himself? It was Lamar Odom in 2003, 13 years ago, the same season that they drafted Dwayne Wade, the same summer. And so I'm not saying that Dwayne Wade could have gotten LeBron and Chris Bosh to sign without Pat Riley, but Pat Riley couldn't have gotten them to sign without Dwayne Wade. So now Wade's gone, Bosh is gone, LeBron's been gone. I just don't see that all these people that say Pat Riley's going to fix it, Pat Riley will figure it out, he's the wizard, he's the godfather, he will build a championship. I just prove to me how he's done it and how he will do it, because I think the trust is misplaced and I think his reputation is a bit overrated. I know I'm going to get a lot of flack from Heat fans for that, but to me, I just don't want to trust this guy who, frankly, has been bad the last couple of years. I mean, this is a team that went from four straight finals to what looks like two lotteries in three seasons.
I don't know that you can put all the blame on Riley, though, and it seems a little... It seems a little, you know, difficult to say that he's responsible for having forced LeBron and Wade out. Now, I can see that more and more with Dwayne Wade. With LeBron, I just think that there was so much at stake there, you know, particularly when you look at the ability to salvage how he's viewed by, you know, NBA fans at large, his overall legacy and things of that sort. I think his decision to sign with Miami dealt such a blow to his popularity and how fans see him that it was necessary for him to go back to Cleveland at some point.
Now, that started to turn around after he won a couple titles, and everything about LeBron that we heard since he left was that his relationship with Pat Riley is what forced him out, right? Like, if Pat Riley was so great at creating championship rosters, shouldn't, like, something as simple as something just like a relationship, like, that's what forced LeBron away? Like, if he had a better relationship with LeBron, don't you think LeBron stays? Or there's a much better chance he does?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know that it's necessarily... I think the comment that Riley may have made toward... Or I guess it's confirmed now that he made to LeBron about making the biggest mistake of his life by going back to Cleveland, I think that's been overblown a little bit. And it kind of makes Riley look particularly salty, I suppose. But at the time, I can understand his old school mentality of saying... You know, as he did in 2014, that players stick it out if they have the guts and all this. It was the wrong approach. And as we've talked about before, LeBron has always been about trying to develop or reshuffle the way that power is, you know, arranged in the NBA. It's all about garnering a little bit more control for himself and how things are managed at the personnel level. And I mean, he's fought hard for it. He's been able to accomplish that, I think, in Cleveland. You know, you want to say that he has a little bit more influence on how decisions are made within the organization. Maybe he didn't have that kind of power here in Miami. I just don't know whether or not it's necessarily Riley who drove those players away. And I mean, you could look at his relationships with, you know, Dwayne Wade, and I guess they fell apart a little bit, particularly this year, and they were hurt over the last year as well. And with Chris Bosh, it's difficult to say whether or not he necessarily drove him away. I mean, it certainly wasn't made any easier by Bosh's health complications forcing Riley's hand. I mean, maybe that's the thing. You know, Riley has always been very cutthroat, and maybe that's what's been overblown with or kind of flown under the radar. And now we're just trying to, you know, we're starting to see the reality is that he's he wants to win more than anything else. And if that means having to sacrifice a player or two or three along the way, then he's willing to make that choice. Well, and I think,
less about how he drove these guys away and more about how can we trust him to rebuild a championship roster, because that's what I keep seeing on Twitter and Facebook and on Reddit and everywhere and in the comment sections and articles, and everybody's like, well, he'll fix it. He's going to figure it out. And I just say, what evidence do we have that he's going to fix it? These guys are gone. And unlike when LeBron left Cleveland, the Heat didn't get anything in return for LeBron. I mean, those three guys are all gone, and they all walked away, and he got nothing in return for these guys. And it's just, to me, that's a huge blunder on Riley's part, regardless. I mean, it's three times that something weird happened. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, the buck stops at Riley.
You're absolutely right. But look, the LeBron situation, if anything, when he left in 2014, I think you and I and a lot of media pundits in general complimented Riley's ability to rebuild a possible playoff contender. And he, you know, they didn't make the playoffs that year because of the fact that Chris Bosh moved, you know, lost half the season due to his first injury with blood clots. And I think, you know, he made a big trade for Goran Dragic. They were a team on the rise, and it certainly looked like, you know, a team that was rebuilding despite the loss of you know, LeBron James. And when you look in contrast of what happened in Cleveland when LeBron left in 2010, that's a whole different story. I mean, look at how Riley was able to take this team and you know, help them go along the way. He signed Luol Deng. He was able to get, you know, Josh McRoberts, Danny Granger. It was at least evidence that he wants to keep this team along their winning ways. And I think that's an important part of it. He's willing to do whatever is necessary in order for the team to keep winning. And, you know, they made it to the playoffs last year. This year, they've lost Wade. But the flip side of that is you don't have to pay Wade $20 million a year to be a team that clashes with your point guard as far as, you know, playing style is concerned. That might be a little bit of a prima donna on and off the court. You know, as far as Chris Bosh is concerned, again, you don't have to pay him that salary. Yeah. You don't have to continuously engage with this.
But if this is a rebuild, though, it's a rebuild without draft picks. You know, it's just like, I can't tell if this is a rebuild or if Riley is just like grasping for straws, like, you know, all of a sudden he's just going to trade two future first rounders for Goran Dragic, a trade that I still like, by the way. But
sure,
if it was a rebuild, you don't trade two future first rounders. I feel like Riley, the guy who always had that master plan, I think it's a little bit of a charade right now. But let's move on, and really quick, let's talk about SeatGeek a little bit. Have you used SeatGeek, David?
I have, actually. A few weeks ago, I used it to buy tickets for one of my favorite bands of all time.
Journey? Or?
No, not quite.
ABBA?
I use it to buy Fish tickets, actually.
Fish tickets. Okay, well, I'm sure you know, but if our listeners don't know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to. If it's Fish, maybe it's ABBA. Or if you're like me, it's Chance the Rapper in October. SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. Everything
I found
about
it really easy.
What?
I found it really easy to use, actually.
Did you download the app?
Of course.
The coolest thing to me about SeatGeek is that you could download the app, you could buy the ticket on the app, you can get $20 back after you made your first purchase if you use the code LOHEAT, and then the ticket just appears on your phone. Like, you, and then you could scan it as you enter the venue on your phone. Like, you don't have to print anything off of a printer you may or may not have. I mean, everything's just right there for you. And SeatGeek gets the most bang out of your buck because they give you a grade based on the value of each ticket that's available. They have these cool, like, little big green dots that mark like a really good value or a small red dot right. for a not so good value. So it takes all of the guessing work out of it. It gives you cool pictures that of a lot of venues of what your view from that seat will look like.
Right.
Our listeners get a $20 rebate off their very first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate, just download the SeatGeek app, which we were just talking about. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOHEAT, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your very first ticket purchase. Now, like I said, I just used it for Chance the Rapper. I got an amazing deal on the two tickets for me and my girlfriend. We're going to go see him at the Greek Theater. I couldn't be more excited. I got like a bunch of notifications set to like monitor ticket prices for a bunch of different concerts for the rest of the year. So I'm using SeatGeek. It's on my phone. I mean, I don't, it's like kayak.com, but for tickets, so it's perfect. All right, so download the SeatGeek app, LO Heat, $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Chris Bosh now. I think that with the Heat saying that they're not, that they believe Bosh's career is over, Bosh in that documentary mentioned that he felt dismissed and pushed aside by the Miami Heat doctors. Now, Pat Riley came out and said that, you know, he didn't agree with that. Riley said he was never just written off. That was a poor statement on his part because it besmirched our doctors and our efforts to find a protocol. Now, I don't know whether or not that's true. I think that those comments by Bosh were a little overblown. I thought he talked more about wanting to find his own opinion and his own doctors and his own protocol, right? Than more than what the Heat doctors did. I don't think he was accusing them of malpractice. I don't think he was accusing them of not trying. I just think that the Miami Heat doctors looked at him and they said, look, like, this is a second blood clot in a year for you. You know, you got to really think about retiring right now. Your career might be over. And these are doctors that have like 14 other players to attend to, while also going through a whole other season and then a whole playoff season. So, of course, you know, and Bosh is not on the court. So I could see why, you know, maybe that he was made to be pushed aside because he's not on the court. He's not playing. And at some point, you got to take care of the players that are playing, right? Not to sound so cold-blooded, but I get it.
It sounds a little bit like, you know, again, I think at the time when we first discussed those comments last week, you know, part of it was my feeling anyway, that maybe there was a lack of empathy from the doctor's perspective. I think, you know, you see a lot of that in the medical community. I think they talk at you, not necessarily to you. It's a separation between, like, say, a holistic healer type who tries to work with you and kind of figure out what the problem might be and help diagnose it and work together, rather than just delivering, you know, a diagnosis kind of coldly and telling you, well, this is what's going to happen next, and this is what you're supposed to follow as far as a plan of attack or treatment or something along those lines. And that's, you know, that's a problem for the medical community in general. And I can understand why Chris, you know, was somewhat dismayed by how that diagnosis was delivered a second time. Again, we weren't in the room. We can't speak to what was said between the Heat's doctors and Chris Bosh. Now, for Chris to act like that, maybe it was perhaps a little oversensitive at his part, but, you know, he was a little concerned about being told that his career, his life as he knew it, might be over.
Because last Thursday, the report was that Miami Heat doctors gave him another physical, and they reported that he had more clotting concerns, and that they believe his career is probably over. So Chris Bosh walks into the Heat doctor room, whatever, you know, and undergoes the blood work. They come back with files and manila folders or whatever, and they say, you have more clots or whatever it was that they said, was that they found, and we're not going to be able to clear you for your physical. If you're Chris Bosh and you've clearly not trusted this organization lately, going back to the last playoffs when you were trying to get back on the court, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even – like, do you even trust these doctors or do you – does the cynic in Bosh and does the cynical in you, frankly, because in me, this kind of alarm went off for me. It's like, is this a conspiracy? I know we've talked a lot about conspiracies lately, but it's like, that's got to be a concern for Chris Bosh, right? Like, how could you trust this doctor who you've never trusted in the first place to say, yeah. So when Barry Jackson reports that Bosh took the news, he accepts the news from the doctors, but it doesn't mean that he's going to retire. Right. I wonder if that's kind of the thought process. Like, the trust thing is major here, right?
Yeah, it has to be. I'm at a point now, I got to be honest with you, Wes. I don't even know what to think anymore because it's been so topsy-turvy over the last few days, weeks, months. And I don't even know. I mean, there's so many different possibilities. Is Bosh whining about it incessantly? Is he trying too hard to come back on the court? Should he just give it up? Is the Heat like this, you know, black cabal working in the shadows to try and screw him over? Are there a team of doctors that aren't necessarily working on Bosh's best interest? There's so many different possible conspiracies and angles to look at. And I don't even know what to think anymore. I'm just more at a point right now where I'm just disappointed that I'll never be able to see Chris Bosh play basketball again in a Heat uniform.
That's the biggest thing, right? Like, I mean, we knew it was serious, but we didn't know it was like, I think you and I had talked a long months ago that this could be the end of Bosch's career. But deep down, like, I think you and I both believed that we'd see Bosch again, right? Like, we, or at least we were hopeful or optimistic even. And now it's just,
okay. Did he give it another go, yeah.
Yeah. Or, you, yeah, just try one more time or whatever. And right. And with Riley saying on at Media Day that his career as a Miami Heat player is over, it's just like, holy shit. You know, it's like,
there, this is the last finality of it is immense.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it in context of the joy of his re-signing in 2014, and even now that's been corrupted somewhat because of talk of, you know, that his agent Henry Thomas kind of forced Riley's hand by giving him this ridiculous deadline that he was either supposed to sign him for the max level of money or he was going to sign for less in Houston and all this. So even that's been, you know, damaged somewhat in hindsight. But the joy of him coming here in 2010 and re-signing in 2014, the player he was on the court, but also the person he was off of it, we've spoken and written about it a number of times. It's hard to think that that's all been, you know, blackened and damaged somewhat over the last couple of months. And to think that now, even worse, is that he's just not even going to be playing in the Heat uniform. Whether or not there was a little bit of distrust there between him and the team, as we've talked about before, you know, there's always going to be a weird relationship between employer and employee. And yeah. At the end of the day, Chris Bosh was just an employee of the team. And so if there was going to be some distrust there, that's understandable. I mean, the Heat is all about winning for the Heat. Chris Bosh is about winning for Chris Bosh and never the twain shall meet. And you hope that it is as a fan, but that's not necessarily the case. I mean, they have to look out for their own individual interests, both of them, you know, both Pat Riley
right.
as a representative of the organization and Chris Bosh as, well, representing himself and his best interests and his family's best interests. So,
yeah, at this point, it's you can't blame either side for what's happened, right? I know I spent like 6 minutes the first part of this podcast blaming Pat Riley for the dismantling of this team, but in this particular instance, you're right. Like, Pat Riley at this point, with the cards that he's been dealt, is doing what he can. And Chris Bosh, with the cards he's been dealt, is doing what he can. And for people to attack Chris Bosh as much as he has to keep trying, it's like, this is what this guy has done, basically, his whole life, has been working towards. And just all of a sudden, it's just like, just take that thing that you love to do for, or just take that thing that you are good at that you do for a living, and then just take it away. And all of a sudden, you just go find something else to do with your life. I mean, of course he's fighting for it.
It's so ridiculous too, because the argument is always, oh, these players don't care enough. They're not passionate enough. They're not throwing themselves on the floor and bleeding and getting, you know, floor burns to die for loose balls because they don't care. It's like, well, you can make up your goddamn mind. You know, you can't have it both ways. Do you want them to kill themselves on the court but not kill themselves on the court? I mean, you can't have it both ways. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, conflicting and incongruous, I think. So I'd rather them be a little bit more consistent as fans to think, you know, do you want him to give that maximum effort and at the same time understand why he's trying so desperately to come back to something that has defined his life for over 20 something years. I mean, this isn't just a passing hobby. He didn't take this up a couple of years ago. You know, he's 32 now. He's been playing, let's assume, for at least 20 something years of his life. This is what probably pushed him through high school. It's what gave him a college scholarship. It's what's provided millions of dollars to him and his family. It's what allowed him to meet his wife and create his beautiful children. I mean, this is responsible for everything that he's ever done over the last 20 something years. And all of a sudden say, sorry, you can't do it anymore. And so unexpectedly, when you thought he was going to be able to play for another at least 5, 6, 7 years, I mean, he's still young enough and versatile enough that you thought he would still be able to play for a good long time. And unfortunately, that's just doesn't seem to be the case. So
and he could still play, right? Like, that's the thing is, like, he's going into the gym, he's putting up shots. Those shots are going in the basket. He's working out. He's getting his body into condition. I mean, he can play basketball, but he can't without the fear of being, like, you know, really, really injured or worse. You know, it's like there's like a serious medical thing, but it's not like a torn ACL that you can, you know, you can not walk on. You know, it's like it's just like this weird blood thing that you can't see. Right
now, there are comments though from Riley. I guess he was asked a question: will Chris continue to look for an opportunity to play elsewhere? And Riley's response was, "Well, that's up to him."
Right, he seems open-minded, and that's up to him. But he's not going to play for the Miami Heat.
And I don't know exactly how the business aspect of that breaks out, but I assume that he's likely to get waived by the team at some point in the future. And then as far as what his salary, how his salary is paid, then depends on whether or not another team is going to be taking him off. I mean, I guess, I mean, nobody's going to pick him up off waivers or anything like that. So he could be waived outright by the team and still become effectively a free agent where another team could sign him, correct?
Right. And so now the question becomes, what do the Heat do with his contract? Because he's, if they're done with the player, right, what do they have to do with the contract? So I kind of read into the CBA a little bit this morning and trying to figure this out. And so the reports are well known. Like, the Heat can apply in February to have his contract taken off the books. And that seems to be the process here. And it seems like this that would work, right? It seems that with this latest physical result that this is what's going, it'll work in the Heat's favor come February, that they'll be able to get his contract off the book. The question now is, do you hang on to Chris Bosh until that entire time, that in that for a year basically, you know, in that entirety up until February 9th, I think it is, which was the last time Bosh was on the court. Or do you waive him right now, open up a roster spot to try to replace him? The $20 million and everything, that still hits the cap regardless if he's on the roster or if you waive him right now, until you could apply to have that removed from your cap in February 9th. But they could waive him. And from what I understand, they could waive him. But the risk that you run there, if you're the Heat, is that if you waive him and some other team picks him up, which they could do, and decides, no, we're going to give him a shot here, and he plays, I think, more than 10 games, I think it has to be,
right,
then all of a sudden that contract goes back on the Miami Heat's books, and there's no way that they could apply for a medical retirement. So I don't think that that's what's going to happen. I don't think that they're going to risk it. I think that they would rather control the situation by keeping him on the roster for until February 9th, where at that point they could apply for the medical reimbursement, so to speak. That's not what it's called, but that's basically kind of what it is.
Now, they asked Riley about, you know, the continuing his relationship with Chris Bosh, and I guess that he hoped it doesn't end in discord, because, you know, he said, and this is a quote, "We have to sit down and have a conversation. Anytime Chris is willing to have it, I'm more than welcomed. I emailed him the other day," something he's not willing to do to Dwayne Wade, apparently, "to have a meeting, but he has not heard back. The door is wide open." And that makes it seem kind of one-sided there, right? That it's all up to Chris now.
Well, that's a classic. It's a classic Riley move, right? Like, put the onus on
Chris Bosh.
Yeah, exactly. Put the invitation out there in the public, and then, you know, I have an email written to Dwayne Wade too. I just haven't hit send either. Just so you know,
What are you waiting for, man? Do it. I didn't even know you had his email address.
I don't. That's what I'm waiting for. So, I mean, if you're the Heat, then you don't have Bosh. Let's talk about it a little bit now. You have training camp coming up, starting Tuesday in the Bahamas. You're left with some options. You have to replace Chris Bosh in some way. Now, at the very least, at least we have the finality. If you're the Miami Heat, you say, okay, we can't count on Chris Bosh. We may have been hopeful, and I still believe that they were hopeful. I don't think this was a conspiracy theory, by the way. I know I said that earlier, but it was just a cynical thing if you were standing in Chris Bosh's shoes. Based on what they did this offseason, I think they did want Chris Bosh back on the court. But they can't. And so you have Josh McRoberts, Derek Williams, James Johnson, and Luke Babbitt as your options to start at power forward. Not the best options, right?
No, not, that's certainly a little bit of a step down from a Hall of Fame player like Chris Bosh. You know, we've talked about the options and you know, what they represent. I think the two best options likely are Derek Williams, who provides a little bit of that athleticism and the potential to run alongside guys like Whiteside, Winslow, and Dragic, and what we expect to be a more up-tempo style of play. And if that's the case, you want somebody like Williams who's able to finish at the rim, who has a little bit of athleticism, who can spot up from the outside and shoot from shoot if necessary. Not a consistent three-point shooter, but he does have that option. He can space the floor a little bit, so it's not just a matter of clogging the paint. So that seems to be the best option, I think. But then you've brought up on a number of occasions the possibility of adding Josh McRoberts and having him start at power forward, and that presents some options as well, because he is another floor spacer, because his passing and versatility as a facilitator adds a new dimension. You have somebody else there who can rotate the ball, who can find cutters, who can find Whiteside as he dives towards the rim. And it's an interesting option. You don't have to necessarily play him a whole hell of a lot of minutes. You can just start him and see whether or not that works effectively. If it, you know, build up a lead that way, or at least keep a pace with an opposing team, and then go to a more athletic secondary unit with Derek Williams and James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and other guys like that who can play alongside a Whiteside, or perhaps you keep Winslow in there, put him at power forward, and shift the lineup around a little bit.
Well, I do think
you know,
there's
still
happen.
Options.
And I think a lot of what the Heat do at power forward is going to depend on whether or not Justice Winslow actually has developed a jump shot or not. Because if he can't shoot, right, if he's not a consistent shooter and teams start playing off him, and I think you have to go with a Josh McRoberts or even Luke Babbitt, who can shoot the three ball, as the starting power forward, just because if between having Hassan Whiteside and Justice Winslow on the floor, if Winslow's a non-factor from outside, you can't have another non-shooter on the floor. That is going to kill Miami's spacing. It's going to kill what Goran Dragic wants to do getting to the rim. And as just for the starting group, it'll probably be best to have a floor spacer out there. But if Winslow has developed a jump shooter and he is respectable from three-point range, and he can help space the floor, then that opens the door to have a more athletic Derek Williams who can crash the boards and maybe take the ball down the floor in transition and do some athletic things that way. I think the other thing that this impacts is who starts at shooting guard, because I think you're exactly right. I think we're going to see a lot of Justice Winslow at the four. And I know you and I have talked about Josh Richardson starting at the two a lot this summer and basically have decided that he would be best. And lately I've been thinking that it would be better to start Deion Waiters. I like Deion Waiters. I like the idea of him as a sixth man coming off the bench and providing that scoring punch. But I also like the idea of him starting at the two, because Josh Richardson is a guy who could play the two and the three. Maybe Richardson plays that Andre Iguodala role a little bit. You start with Dragic, Waiters, and Winslow, and then maybe, let's just say, Josh McRoberts and Whiteside, right? Let's just, whatever. And you bring Richardson off the bench within the first few minutes of the game, and you can take McRoberts off the floor, move Winslow to the four. Richardson comes in and plays the three, and now you have this small ball unit. I don't think you could start with that unit, just because teams don't typically do that. They like to try to get it as positionless as Spoelstra likes to be. I think he still wants to go with the traditional matchups to start the game. Even Steve Kerr in Golden State has said he likes to go traditional matchups to start the game. But that could be an option here, because it does provide a little bit more versatility for the Heat, especially if you're trying to, you know, mix and match at that four spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are options there for Spoelstra. We're just not quite sure how comfortable he'll be. And you know, you can't underestimate the factor of Richardson being out for all of training camp. So
he did say that at Media Day, they did say that he will be able to do some on-court work. Now, that probably doesn't mean doing 5-on-5 or 1-on-1 drills, but he'll be able to get on the court and maybe shoot some. But the foot brace thingy is off. That's good news.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, that's not necessarily enough to really gauge how effective those kinds of lineups that you're talking about will be. I mean, you want to see what players have the best chemistry. So, I mean, let's look at it from this perspective. You're going to have the ball in Dragic's hands a lot. He's going to be the main facilitator on this team. That means that you have him in that role, but you also have, as a secondary facilitator, more than likely it's going to be Justice Winslow, based on what we heard from Summer League, that he's going to have the ball in his hands. That's how they project he'll be more effective as an offensive playmaker. Obviously, you want him to be a better shooter and have that ability to space the floor. But now that Dwayne Wade's gone, you want somebody in there who will, you know, be able to facilitate a little bit more offensively. What's the best player to fit another role then offensively at the two guard? Is it really Richardson or Deion Waiters? I can't help but think it's still Richardson, just because his athleticism adds something to it, you know, his ability to drive to the rim, but you still want him to be a quality shooter from the perimeter. And I think at this point, he's still a far better shooter than Deion Waiters, at least from what we've seen over the course of his career. That doesn't necessarily mean that Waiters can't be a good shooter. He's particularly good in spot up situations from the corner. You know, he's a little inconsistent from the top of the key, obviously, and he's still able to. He is also a facilitator in his own right. He can create a little bit offensively. I'm not quite sure that we're ready to take Richardson out of the starting lineup at the two guard position.
Waiters can create a shot a little bit more. I mean,
at this point, he's still a little undersized, though. I think, you know, he's generously listed at 6'4". He is not. I would not say that. And he's a little stocky, and he's strong and athletic enough. But I think, you know, with teams going in different lineups, a lot of it might, and this might be a little weak, but, you know, it might be predicated on what kind of matchups they go on a nightly basis. And you don't want to yank players around too much, but you may want to have a little bit of flexibility. I mean, a coach that you admire a lot, Jason Kidd, is very up and down with his lineups. And, I mean, he's willing to take a player in and out, start different people at different positions, and be a little creative and chaotic at times. And it did work two seasons ago. It didn't necessarily work last year. But, you know, it could be something that Spoelstra does. It's not something we've seen in the past from him, though. He's always been a guy who's been much more consistent about his lineups, unless, you know, two seasons ago when he had to go through, 31 different lineups that year in 2014. Wow. It was crazy.
Point being, but, though, the absence of Bosch affects the entire lineup, not just who starts at power forward, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's the Heat, as they enter training camp, they have an open roster battle at the starting power forward spot. That should be really interesting, and it's going to be something that we cover this whole week, and we're going to be talking a lot about Chris Bosh, as I'm sure Chris Bosh, as of time recording this, has not countered what we've heard from Media Day from Miami Heat this morning. I'm sure he will. This is an ongoing story, obviously, and we're gonna talk more about it as we go through the week. But for now, that's all we got. So, as always, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or wherever you get podcasts. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat, or by email at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. We really appreciate it. Write a review. Give us 5 stars if you think we deserve it, which we do. We definitely do. And just say something nice about us, because we love to read it and we really appreciate it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we really want to hear from our fans. We want to hear your feedback on what you like, don't like. Any input you might have on how we can move forward. And, you know, if you have any topics you want us to address throughout the course of the season, bring them up. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me, David.
Absolutely, Wes.
All right, we'll catch you next time.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4 times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.